And welcome to South Sudan in Focus on the Voice of America. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Here are some of the stories we're covering today, Thursday, July 19th, 2018. President Kiir says a power-sharing deal can still be reached.
People of South Sudan are looking for peace. And if that arrangement can bring peace to the people of South Sudan, I'm ready to take it.
And activists say some South Sudanese elites are bargaining away South Sudan's main source of revenue in Khartoum.
It is saddening to see that South Sudanese political elites are giving away the country's oil main source of revenue to foreign interests.
We'll have these stories and more coming up on South Sudan in Focus. South Sudanese delegates to the ongoing talks in Khartoum have been huddled in consultation since early this morning. Some of the mediators at the talks say they expect some sort of power-sharing deal to be announced later today, but those expectations are not confirmed by the opposition delegates at the talks. Opposition parties say the draft proposal presented by the Sudanese mediation does not contain all their demands and overwhelmingly favors the Kiir administration. Yesterday, while announcing his replacement for Foreign Minister on South Sudan state-run television, President Salva Kiir told citizens that their country is an ongoing experiment.
South Sudan has become a field of experiments, things that have never been done in any government or in any country are being tried in South Sudan, whether they will work or they will not work.
However, the president also said he is ready and able to sign a power-sharing agreement to end the suffering of the South Sudanese people.
People of South Sudan are looking for peace. And if that arrangement can bring peace to the people of South Sudan, I'm ready to take it.
Our reporter in Khartoum, Michael Atit, says opposition leader Riek Machar is in a closed-door session at this hour with all of the opposition groups, but there are no details on what they are discussing. In case a deal is signed, preparations are being made for a ceremony. However, the government delegation has yet to arrive at the scene of the talks. It remains unclear if the parties will be able to reach a power-sharing deal this evening or if the Sudanese mediation team will announce further details later in the day. We'll keep you posted on developments throughout the day. A coalition of civil society activists concerned about South Sudan's natural resources say they oppose any peace deal that allows Sudan to share South Sudan's oil assets. They say some South Sudanese political elites are willing to give away the country's main source of revenue to foreign interests at the expense of citizens. Dimo Silva Aurelio reports for VOA from Juba.
A coalition of civil society activists concerned about South Sudan's natural resources, including a petroleum trade union, is calling on the government not to accept a deal that allows Sudan to take part in sharing responsibility of South Sudan's oil fields. Charles Onak Judo is chairman of the Natural Resources Coalition and heads the Upper Nile Youth Development Association. Judo told reporters at a Juba news conference today that if Khartoum is allowed to have direct influence on the country's oil revenues, South Sudan's leaders are buying peace with oil resources that belong to the citizens.
The people of South Sudan need peace and need it urgently. But it is saddening to see that South Sudanese political elites are giving away the country's oil main source of revenue to foreign interests at the expense of citizens.
Judo says the conflict in South Sudan has caused massive displacements, famine, loss of lives and property. He says the South Sudanese people need their petroleum resources to restore the country's broken economy.
While it is good that oil production is resumed, such exercises should be motivated by the desire to use oil revenue for the benefit of the sovereign citizen of South Sudan and not to use oil revenue to escalate violence or satisfy vested foreign interests.
Guido says while the Khartoum agreement signed on June 27th and the deal on security arrangements signed on July 6th give hope to many South Sudanese that peace will be restored, the coalition strongly rejects the provision on the resources, especially the language that allows Khartoum to share in South Sudan's financial management of its oil fields. He says South Sudanese, especially those living near the oil fields in the northern part of the country, have suffered from the effects of oil pollution because the laws on the books that are supposed to protect them are not being implemented. Gido is calling on officials to enforce those laws.
Urgently implement the Petroleum Act 2012 and the Petroleum Health, Safety and Environmental Management System and Plan, HSE, Regulation 2015 in relation to the safety, health and environmental protection, which is critical for petroleum workers and the local communities living around oil fields. Address concerns, including labor rights of the South Sudanese working in petroleum and mining industries, to the internal best practices.
The South Sudan Petroleum Revenue Management Act of 2013 also stipulates that 2% of the oil revenues be returned to the oil-producing state and 3% to the local communities, something he says has never been implemented. Michael Duko Egri works with the Association for Media Development in South Sudan and is a member of the Civil Society Coalition on Natural Resources.
We need peace. There is need for peace. All South Sudan need peace. Civil society need peace. But what we are signaling out is that bring peace, but also protect citizens' oil resources, which are there, for the sake of citizens of South Sudan.
Ayar Deng, program manager of the group United and Save the Nation, says South Sudan has a bad track record with Khartoum over oil resources, and signing any deals that give Khartoum partial control of its oil fields could be dangerous.
You cannot invite the same person that has a problem with you to have to share the responsibility of the same thing that you differ. So this is one we see it. It is not in place. Second to this, why we say cannot be used as a tool actually to buy fees and all this, is because a natural resource or oil revenues are for citizens and for some companies, and fees is completely a different thing.
The Khartoum Declaration of Agreement provides for the immediate resumption and rehabilitation of the damaged oil installations in the Unity region, blocks 1, 2, 4, and 5 in collaboration with the Sudanese government. In March, the U.S. imposed sanctions on 15 South Sudanese oil companies closely connected to the Kiir administration, whose revenues, the U.S. says, are being used to fund the civil war. The U.S. Department of Commerce did not freeze the assets of the 15 companies, but requires that U.S. and foreign companies doing business with those companies first obtain a license. For VOA News, I am Dimo Silva Aurelio in Juba.
Dozens of national non-governmental organizations in South Sudan are combining efforts to build resilience of peace and food security among the local communities. The local NGOs say this will help them to deliver a focused humanitarian response to people in need, especially in remote areas. Manyang David Mayar has the story for VOA from Juba.
10 national non-governmental organizations gathered this morning in Juba to talk about how to build resilience among South Sudan's war-affected communities. Susan Pasquale, director of the Women's Advancement Organization, says the warring parties' practice of politicizing people's ethnic backgrounds is tearing communities apart, and national NGOs must work to bring communities back together again.
The politicization of ethnicity has led to erosion of social cohesion, ethnic differences, which has emerged as a powerful negative factor in South Sudan crisis. I think that's why we are needed so much, the national NGO. Through our experience, we normally discover that it's the national NGOs or the community, local community, who do a lot to build the resilience of their own people.
According to the United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs, or UN OCHA, 7 million people in South Sudan are in need of aid. Pasquale says that kind of massive undertaking requires the combined effort of national organizations. She also worries that when international NGOs leave the country for whatever reasons, South Sudanese communities will struggle to keep people alive.
The international or the donors or the diplomats in South Sudan are not going to continue staying in South Sudan. There will come a time where they will also exit. they will also have to go and support. The world is so big that it needs a help. And if we make use of the presence of our donors and of our government, I think we, the national NGOs, can do a lot. We need to bring ourselves together and then to build the resilience of the community and through integrated programming.
Those programs include peace building, food security and health and nutrition campaigns. South Sudan Humanitarian Affairs and Disaster Management Minister Hossein Marinuot says the role of national NGOs in delivering services to local communities is critical.
National NGOs, they play a very great role. They have a lot of, you know, huge impact that everybody knows. You know the culture of the people. You know the language. You live among the people. And what you are initiating and you are starting, I believe, working together, it will even appeal to our donors.
There have been some reports that young people form local NGOs and team up with international NGOs to do the work on ground. But after one or two projects, they take the money and run. Nyot is warning people not to steal donor money meant for malnourished children in rural areas.
When too many NGOs came up as national NGOs, it also created a situation whereby you get, they dub them as briefcase organizations. Family, myself and my girlfriend or my wife or a man with a friend and all this, they form their NGO, two of them. They appeal, they get the first project, which is a trial, that if you succeed in that, it will bring more support. But as soon as they get the $5,000 or $10,000, they think this is more than $1 million, and they will disappear. No phones, nothing again. This has shamed us.
Nyot call on people working for national NGOs to be committed to the South Sudanese people who need help. There are over 200 national non-governmental organizations registered in South Sudan. Nyot says many conduct themselves properly and are in good financial standing, while others have closed down. Nyot did not disclose how many national non-governmental organizations have been closed so far. For VOA News, I'm Anyang David Mayar in Juba.
You're tuned to South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America. What's the latest on the Uganda social media tax? Find out when we come back.
What do you think? People speak out on important questions. The question today:
what is a funny story that your family tells about you?
I remember one day, well, I was on the phone. I was communicating to a friend. Then my mom thought I was maybe communicating to a boyfriend. And so I was like, "You girls, you don't want to come and work outside here? You don't want to come and help me with domestic work? Hey, you communicate with these boys. Hey, hello on phone."
A funny story my family always tells me about when I was young. I used not like to take shower, even brushing. Whenever my mom or my dad tells me, "Wake up, go and brush," I go around behind the house, I take my own time, and I don't do that.
What do you think? A daily discussion of important questions from VOA.
You're listening to South Sudan in Focus. Pregnant women and victims of accidents or crimes often need blood to pull through an operation. But there is widespread blood scarcity in South Sudan, which continues to take lives in the country. A doctor at Bor Hospital says at least two mothers died recently at the maternity ward because there was not enough blood to save them. Dengai Deng reports from Bor.
Dr. Mayana Mayol, who works at a maternity ward in Bor State Hospital, says patients in the emergency room and pregnant women with complications frequently require blood transfusions.
Blood donation is very important in health. Number one, it is a life-saving measures. For example, last 2 weeks, we were having a mother here that was having a ruptured uterus, and then she bled very badly until she remained with only 2 hemoglobin. So we have to fight so that we get 1 pint of unit. It was very hard to get blood. So we give messages We wrote a lot of letters. We post them on the trees so that we can get the volunteers, but it was very difficult. No one turned up.
Dr. Mayol says two patients who needed blood transfusions died recently because there is no blood bank at Bor Hospital.
The lady delivered at home. Then she bleed a lot at home. Then she was brought here to the hospital. While she was already in shock, we tried to rescue her. We give some conservative management, and then we ordered blood. On process, she passed away because there was, number one, there was no ready blood. Number two, she was brought in shock.
Dr. Mayol says many South Sudanese don't understand the importance of donating blood.
Giving blood is a life-saving measure and is not having a negative impact on you. Example, myself, I have donated my blood. I donate this month, and I also donate in February. I donate in February, and I also donate in June. And it was not my willing to donate, but the situation forced me to do that. If I don't give that blood, that person is going to die. So giving blood does not have impact on you. The same day, I donate blood here to the patient, and then I go to the theater. I stand 4 hours doing operation, and here I am.
Dr. Mayol says he feels frustrated when there is no blood available to perform critical operations. He says before admitting pregnant women with complications, he normally asks relatives to donate blood. But town resident Achuile Ball says he is afraid to donate blood because he thinks his body will not be able to replenish the blood that he donated.
When you give your blood, you may be out of what? Out of the blood. So people may think that their blood are very what? Very little. And when they give it, they will remain with nothing. And you know the condition which is here now in South Sudan, which is facing us, you will not be able to regain back your what? Your blood.
Ball says some people also believe it is wrong to give blood to another person on religious grounds. Resident Mamera Anyuon says donating blood is important, but believes it is risky.
We are living in a community which is not aware of which you don't know your status. But because of fears of HIV/AIDS and hepatitis B and other diseases that are dangerous to our community.
Despite those concerns, Anyuon says he donated blood last year to help save a patient who needed an emergency blood transfusion at Bor State Hospital. Bor resident Chol Nyukun says the State Ministry of Health should educate citizens about the importance of donating blood.
Some of us are lacking education, and this issue, it is something good, but they have not been taught about it.
Both Nyukun and Anyuon are calling on state authorities to create awareness campaigns about the importance of blood donation in South Sudan. For VOA News, I am Deng Gaideng, reporting from Bor.
Eleven days before Zimbabwe goes to the polls, most of the presidential candidates gathered today in the capital, Harare, to sign a peace pledge. This is the second peace pledge they have committed to in the build-up to the July 30th election. Reporter Kudzai Zvinevashi has more details.
Past elections in Zimbabwe have been characterized by violence. The Catholic Church organization Silveria House invited all presidential candidates to pledge to preach peace as they campaign. Bishop Anselimo Magaya urged the candidates to stick to the pledge.
The value of this signing ceremony, as well as the one that we had with NPRC, is going to be strongly located in walking the talk.
There are 23 candidates for president. However, to some, this year's election is considered a two-horse race between the ZANU-PF's candidate, President Emmerson Mnangagwa, and Nelson Chamisa, the candidate for the MDC alliance. However, they were not at the signing ceremony Thursday, and neither sent representatives. Divine Mhambi Wove is the leader of Nationalist Alliance of Patriotic and Democratic Republicans. He said their absence was telling.
There's a gap. There's an emptiness. There are people that are not here. Why are they not here? If I could choose to vote For now, I know who not to choose right now. Because they make noise, they give us hope. But when we gather like this to shape the future of our country, they are not there.
Supporters of ZANU-PF and MDC have been responsible for political violence in the past. Magaya said it would have been great to have their leaders present.
I would have loved a situation where some of the organs that have been key in perpetrating violence to have also been part of the signing ceremony. Where is the police? Of course, they were here. I would have wanted them to really confess their regrets on the past atrocities. Where is the army? Army should have been here.
In the past elections, rights organizations blamed some of the violence on the police and military acting for former President Robert Mugabe, who led ZANU-PF. Charity Charamba, a senior assistant commissioner for the Zimbabwe Republic Police, was at the event and gave an update on the violence seen in this election cycle.
This period we've registered more intra-party violence as opposed to inter-party violence. There are more assaults, minor assaults, defacing or tearing of posters, placing posters on top of rivals' posters, placing posters at private properties. All this is contravention to the Electoral Act.
While the two main candidates were absent at the ceremony, they have been preaching peace to their supporters, a move that has largely contributed to a relatively peaceful political environment in Zimbabwe. For VOA, this is Kudzai Zinawashe from Harare.
The U.S. Department of Homeland Security is to announce today whether it will extend temporary legal protections to about 500 Somalis who have sought refuge in the United States. Most of those who would be affected live in the state of Minnesota, which is home to the nation's largest group of Somali Americans. Unless it is extended, their protected status will expire on September 17th. About 22 U.S. senators have sent a letter to Homeland Security Secretary calling for an extension of the protective status for Somali nationals. Senator Tina Smith of Minnesota is leading the efforts. She told reporter Mohammed Hassan with VOA's Somali service that danger still exists in Somalia. She says revoking protective status would send Somalis back to Somalia or to other countries, and that it could break families apart, creating a humanitarian crisis.
Along with 21 of my colleagues, I have urged the Trump administration to extend these humanitarian protections. These are, we think, around 500 Somali nationals who live in the United States. They have been here, some of them, for decades. And they're here because they were escaping a very dangerous situation in Somalia to find refuge in our country so that they could build a life. The dangers of being in Somalia still exist right now. And I am doing everything I can to push the Trump administration to extend these protections.
Are these senators all Democrats, or you have some Republicans with you?
The senators that have signed on to my letter are all Democrats. It is a very diverse group of senators from a lot of different states. But the point is that this is an issue that affects states that have Democratic representatives and Republican representatives, and I think we should all be raising our voices demanding that the Trump administration extend these protections for people who are making a real contribution to our communities.
Tell us how or what can possibly happen to them if the administration doesn't renew the TPS.
Well, without this extension of TPS, which is scheduled, the deadline for action is today, but the TPS protections would expire in September, then these Somali nationals who are currently living in the United States would then be in a situation where they'd have to return to Somalia or find refuge in another country. I think about the trauma that this puts families through. It breaks families apart. It means that some people in a family might have to go someplace else while others could stay here. Many of these people would have children that might potentially have been born in the United States that they wouldn't be able to be with if they had to leave. I think it creates a whole nother humanitarian crisis here in the United States.
Have you met some of them in Minnesota, and what are they telling you?
I have met many, many Somali people in Minnesota who have told me about this concern and raised this issue. And what I'm always struck by is the the courage and resilience that that it took for people to leave a country that was, many of them spent, you know, months or even years in refugee camps, and then they came to Minnesota, where we have a large and active and very strong Somali community, and they're such an important part of our community in Minnesota. Most Somali people in Minnesota are not there with this TPS protection. They have other you know, many of them are citizens, so it's a relatively small number, but still for those people, it is a terrible situation to find themselves in.
The State Department issued a travel warning for the people who are traveling to Somalia. That shows that there is a danger there. So
yes.
Do you think this will persuade the administration to extend the TPS?
Well, I hope that it will. The conditions that caused people to leave their home country when they first came to the United States, many of those conditions are still in place. It is still, in many ways, a dangerous place where there are human rights abuses and violence, and I think that it is just unconscionable that we would be sending people back into such an unsafe and dangerous condition.
Are there nationals other than Somalis who are also who are going to be affected by this decision?
There are many groups of other people from other countries who are facing similar deadlines, uncertainty about whether they'll be able to stay in this country where they've made their home.
That was Senator Tina Smith speaking with our colleague Mohammed Hassan. The president of the Democratic Republic of Congo, Joseph Kabila, spoke of his passion for the country in a speech to parliament today. However, he did not answer the question many people are asking. Will he be a candidate in the December presidential election? He did say the elections would proceed as scheduled and the government would pay all costs instead of seeking international aid. He also focused on economic and social issues, such as the fact that the number of school children more than doubled to 22 million since 1997. The president, who took over from his assassinated father in 2001, was to have left office at the end of 2016 when his second term ended. However, his government has repeatedly delayed elections. A vote is now scheduled for December. Candidates are registered between July 25th and August 1st. A large segment of the population is opposed to another term for him, including the influential Catholic Church. There have been numerous protests against him over the past 2 years. And that's our show for this Thursday. We leave you with the song Allah Jar by Abdelaziz Almu. Listening to Abdelaziz Almu with the song Allah Jar. I'm Ayen Dangbior in Washington. Thanks for listening. We'd like to hear what you think about our show. You can find us at southsudan@voanews.com or reach us on Facebook. Our title is South Sudan in Focus. Join us again tomorrow evening for another edition of South Sudan in Focus from the Voice of America.